Hello, everyone. As usual, I have yet another amazing guest on the show. I think I'm just like network filled with the most amazing people. 99 Dev Problem Show here this morning in the United States. But Tejas, for you, it is a different time of day. So what time of day is it for you? And I'd love to have you introduce yourself.
Yeah, it's 5 p.m. here in Berlin, Germany. And I'm honored to join the show with you, Tessa. I'm Tejas Kumar. I've been building on the web for over 20 years at places like Vercel, Spotify, Zeta, and more. And today I'm an AI developer relations engineer at DataStax, where it hasn't been a year yet, but it's the best job I've ever had. I mean, I get to do research in AI, and I get to teach people how to get the most out of AI. And you know, we build tools to make that possible. So part of it is teaching people the tools, but part of it is also like, hey, how do I chat with a PDF, like in a decent way, you know? So it's a lot of fun.
That sounds super fun. Honestly, I have this like project that I'm like chasing down where I want to put like, essentially like insights that I have into sort of like a agent or LLM like model that you can chat with it. So I might have to tap your brain on that when I start diving into that project a little bit more. It sounds like you get the beautiful pleasure of experimenting and learning all of that while getting paid, which is like extremely amazing.
Yeah. And it's also, it's getting paid to learn, because then I have to teach, and the teaching is a lot of fun. Like, we get to do workshops around tools like Astra, Langflow. Langflow is our like main AI tool. That I think it's a noble mission where we just democratize AI. Like, it's taking this thing that people are afraid of. Like, there's a ton of people, Tessa, who are like, I don't know Python. I didn't go to university. I don't know linear algebra. And they're like, I can never do AI. And we're like, no, you can't. Here's Langflow. It's drag and drop. It's low code. Like, there's nothing to be afraid of here. Just and we walk them through it, right? And so that's the part that I enjoy. And as a consequence, like, it also just adds value to the company, because then people use Langflow and they like, our capitalization is the removal of their imposter syndrome. I think that is so cool.
Honestly, that is probably the best work that somebody could do. At least I feel like, right? I know that as engineers, like, you know, we have a lot of opinions and things that we like to do. But at the end of the day, I think more than anything, it's so clear to me like how much developers enjoy helping other developers alongside of like engaging and spending time with them. And so what a beautiful way to give back to a company in like such an incredibly meaningful way, obviously, for, you know, bottom line and such, but being able to really like engage with your peers like that.
Yeah. And what's especially rewarding is like, yes, meeting and teaching developers, but I find even like meeting and teaching and equipping not developers, but people who are like afraid of being developers, you know, people who are like, I don't know if I can even call myself a developer. And we get to go in and be like, no, you can, believe me. And they go like, wait, but like, I'm using Langflow and I'm just dragging and dropping some stuff. Yeah, but you're developing a solution. And they go like, what? So I'm a developer? Yeah, you are. And that's, I mean, that's just so cool.
That is incredibly powerful. I had the beautiful blessing to teach over 300 women to code in Minneapolis a few years ago, first in my career. Yeah, it was amazing. It was through Girl Develop It, the organization, previous to, unfortunately, their shutting down, of course. But that was the most amazing part of it, was like seeing the look on their face when they're like, oh my gosh, I just wrote code. Like, I'm a developer. And then the like second most amazing part was seeing them go out and actually get a job, like taking those skills that they learned in an HTML or intro to JavaScript class and like expanding, and then now they're getting employed. So that honestly is to be incredibly rewarding, not only helping your peers, but also, you know, giving someone like this empowerment and equipping them with skills they didn't previously have.
Yeah, and I think a big part that continues like right now, so a lot of people are starting conversations this year, Tessa, with the phrase 2025 is the year of AI agents. Like, this phrase is everywhere. And AI itself is such a, I'd say, new, relatively topic that sort of exploded in late 2022, right? Whereas things like React have been around for over 10 years. But AI is new, but agents even more so. And I think it's very interesting that, one, it's just not, at least now it's slowly starting to become a well-defined term, but previously it was not. Like, people were talking about agents and they were all kinds of different. Like, I remember I was at a meetup once and somebody was saying, hey, we built this agent and so on. It was just a like a custom GPT, a feature of OpenAI's chat. It was a custom GPT with like a knowledge base. It was not an agent, and that it couldn't perform tasks. But this word, because it was so nebulous and nascent, was just misused. And I think there's danger there because it can amplify the imposter syndrome of other people, right? Like somebody says agent this, agent that, and then the other party maybe feels, especially, and I've seen this most commonly with women and people from minorities who will feel like, oh, I should maybe know what they're talking about, but I don't, so I'm going to pretend, you know? And part of my job with DevRel is to be like, here's the working definition of an AI agent from this 2024 Google paper, and also here's what OpenAI just defined as an agent yesterday as they announced their new operator. And so I get to like do this research study and then really dismantle this imposter syndrome of like, this is what an agent is. These are the sources. And now we can actually teach you how to build them, right? Using LangFlow and things that we make. But that, I mean, that's the secret sauce. It's like you take something that is so scary, AI agents. Oh my gosh, what are they? Can I make one? And we go like, yes. And here's what they are. You know, I think like bringing order to the chaos in people's minds, I think is so key for this role.
Mm-hmm. I fully agree. Actually, my first developer advocate role came after my girl develop it experience and all that teaching, and is actually why I got the role, is that there was connections, people knew each other, they were looking for a developer advocate. It was called an agency, what is it called? Like an agency and community engineer is what the title was technically. And they found me and they're like, we heard that you taught all these women to code. Like, that's the kind of person that we need, because it was very education heavy. It was very training heavy. Same thing, right? It was like sort of, in that case, it was like cloud infrastructure in WordPress, and people in WordPress were like, what the heck are containers, you know? And so I'm like, hey, it's not as scary as you think. Like CI and CD is actually really cool. Like, you know, and if you know anything about WordPress, as you know, or anyone else, right, WordPress can be sort of this archaic way of building FTP, you know, sort of insecure if that's the way you build. But it was just so fun to be able to sort of dismantle. It doesn't have to be like that. You can have more developer efficiencies and productivities brought into what is felt like an archaic stack, if that makes sense. So anyways, totally get it and definitely resonate and understand why you love it so much. Well, love. Enjoy it so much, right? Okay, so taking back just a couple of steps, I'd love to hear what your developer education is, if you have any official, if you're self-taught, sort of how you learned to get into this field to begin with.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm uneducated. I have no education. I think that's just important to get out there. I did not go to college. I barely finished high school, but that's because my background is colorful. Like I grew up very ill and I was bouncing in and out of hospitals. Like I'm not a healthy person by any means. I am now, but I wasn't. And so I couldn't take the risk of going to school. But as a consequence, like the other side of that coin is because I didn't even attend like school, from kindergarten through 12th grade, I spent a lot of time at home sort of doing self-education. I had hobbies. Like I loved games, Prince of Persia, Pokemon. And I was like, how do you make these? And so I literally learned like game scripting. And then there was this pivot to visual design where I've always loved this macOS Aqua style UI. They used to have these balls, these like shiny balls. The close, minimize, and maximize buttons on macOS used to be like shiny, you know, with reflections and things. And I thought this is so cool. So I had illegal copies of Photoshop when I was a kid, and so I used to try and like replicate that, make glassy stuff, which led to graphic design, which led to I can design static pictures of web pages, but how do I make them web pages? Which led to something called the slicing tool in Photoshop, where you slice things up into tables that are HTML. And slowly this became web design, which became, okay, cool, but like I need a database. I need this to be interactive. And so from there came JavaScript and DevOps and the full. So it's really just like I'm interested in this and I like to play in the sandbox. And I'm still playing in the sandbox like 20 years later. But it's like that. And so it's maybe a privileged position, which I'm thankful for, but I genuinely, it doesn't feel like work. I don't think I've frankly ever worked a day in my life when it comes to code and tech. But I do like work when I deal with other people. Like other people are nice. But there's just, there's personalities and attitudes, and you need to be political about things, and you need to get buy-in, and you need to convince this stakeholder about that, and quarterly reviews and OKRs. Like to me, that's work. People are work in the workplace. But like if I'm building something like Langflow.new, if I'm building an agent workflow, if I'm, you know, mm-hmm. like this is just the sandbox. I think it's so cool. So to answer your question, maybe in a longer winded way than you may have liked, it's all... My education is just playing in a sandbox, and it has been that way since I was born. It's going to stay that way till I die, probably.
I really, really, really love that so much. As a three-time college dropout, not obviously for different reasons, mostly just because my brain does not allow me to learn via lecture and the format that college provided at that time. I love to hear that story because I think it's beautiful. Obviously, you had some dynamics in your life that sort of forced that upon you in ways that you couldn't control. But I think it's amazing that, you know, you found a beautiful passion out of that, because like for anyone, if you don't follow Tejas, you absolutely need to follow Tejas. I'll make sure that I put the links in the show notes, but you're just so good about like tweeting and posting on social media and wherever you're engaging about just like, you constantly say this kind of stuff, like how much you love building, how much it's not a job, how much, you know, the technology and stuff that you really enjoy. And it's empowering, because for me, it's like, I have gotten so pulled into the peoples and the politics and being on the leadership side of all of that and only getting to do most of what you just shared in my most recent roles that like I have sort of forgotten and lost that like love of just like getting your hands in there and just playing in the sandbox, like you say. So thank you for sharing that. That was really beautiful.
Yeah. And this is why like working in DevRel at DataStax, I feel this responsibility of giving the sandbox to other people. And I keep mentioning like Langflow and agents. Langflow is a sandbox, you know, and mm-hmm. like, it's like, hey, if you wanted to do like a RAG or an agent or whatever, here's a sandbox, let's play in it. And we don't yet have collaborative features like multi-cursor, like Figma, but sure. Believe me, I keep wanting this, and I keep like bringing it up at work, because I think if I can be in this literal like UI browser-based sandbox with you, guiding you through building an agent or something, or an LLM-based app, like that sandbox becomes everyone's sandbox. And then there could be a generation of people who maybe they like you, they don't like to learn from lectures. The current like mainstream education style doesn't suit them for whatever reason. Well, mm-hmm. They maybe don't need that because they have Langflow or a similar sandbox, you know? And so that I think is so profound. And this is, I keep saying Langflow, which sure, that's front of mind because it's my job, but there's also things like Stack Blitz, Code Sandbox, Bolt.new, V0, like all of these tools that are really just sandboxes for the next generation.
Yeah. Oh, that's like a whole analogy of like a whole playground, right? It's like you think about kids running around and playing and just living their best life. And it's like, exactly. It's like, can you create that while building technology, which honestly is like your true essence. Like, wow, what a beautiful role for you to be in and playing, because it's just so Tejas branded. Okay. So you get to do a lot of cool stuff in your day-to-day, and you shared some of it. In terms of like, what does maybe a day-to-day look like in like where you're bouncing back and forth? Are you doing a lot of coding? Are you helping others when you're educating? Just kind of what does that sort of traditional day look like?
Yeah, I have over the years, I've discovered a really great productivity protocol for myself that works very, very well for me. You know, the caveat here is everybody's different. Everybody grew up differently and has different ways of working. But for me, I learned about the terminology for this from my friend Michelle Bakels, who, if she hasn't been on the show, she probably should be.
Love that.
She learned this also from someone else, where they break up work into what they call offensive work and defensive work. And have you heard these terms before? Has people mentioned this?
No.
Okay. So
no, but I'm so intrigued.
Yeah, offensive work is work where you move your needle. Like you have a task and you make progress towards your task. This has nothing to do with anyone else. This is you working on your feature or your, depending on where in the org chart you are, your main thing, right? You may be a professional CEO brought in to engineer an exit for your company. That's your whole job, is like, how are we going to IPO? This is what you think about. And so like wherever you are, offensive work is you obsessing over your thing. Defensive work is the other stuff, is the, hey, we need to do this meeting about this thing that you probably don't care about, but like we have to. It's you know, getting things audit ready for SOC 2. It's like all the nonsense. It's like responding to emails. It's like being on the podcast that you don't want to be on. Some podcasts you do want to be on, like this one. But other than it's like doing all the stuff that you're like, I don't, why am I doing? And okay. Some things you just have to, for example, I'll give you a great example of defensive work. For me, I have to do some visa stuff. I hate visa stuff. I hate being treated like a foreigner who's not welcome in a country. And I need to prove my income. And like the United Kingdom is the worst about this, right? Like they treat me like a terrorist coming into the country multiple times to the point where I'm thinking, I'm doing you a favor coming here. I'm literally like, people are buying tickets to see this thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so defensive work, dealing with visa nonsense, offensive work, building langflow.new. And so that's one thing. I split my work this way and yeah. I've learned, and some people will have to do trial and error, but for me, what works extremely well is I've learned that I'm able to execute highly intense bouts of focus and cognitive mm-hmm. work in windows of about an hour and a half, 90 minutes or so. Wow. Yeah, and it's really great because like I can set an intention and I can press the on switch. And like the whole world disappears. Nothing else. All I see is the sandbox, right? And for those 90 minutes, like no one's allowed to interrupt me. My phone is somewhere else. It's like in the bathroom, which I will not go to. No bathrooms allowed. No food. No drink. I'm just like in the sand. I'm focused. it's such a heightened state of focus. It's incredible, and it's a rush. Like it feels like, wow, this is amazing. So I do that for 90 minutes. It's very very intense focus. And in those 90 minutes. Like sometimes I finish and I like exit the state and I'm like, oh my goodness, what did I just do? it looks like an entire day's worth of work. It's bananas. And
I love that.
And so I'm capable of maybe two or three of these a day. I think three is impossible, like two. But also when I like emerge from my focus hole, I'm tired. Like, and I think this is something that we're not trained in. This is something that I learned on the job, so to speak.
Yeah.
Cognitive work demands energy just as much as physical work or emotional work work. Like you could sit there and focus on a hard problem for like 2 hours and you'll feel as if you've like been on the treadmill for 2 hours, you know, just like very exhausting.
I agree. So
after one, maybe two of these bouts, I'm like, offensive work, I can't do anymore today. I'm done. I gave my best. I left nothing on the field. I finished the race well. I honored everybody. And then I've got like some extra time in the day. And this is for defensive work, right? It's for the visa stuff. It's for the like code reviews. A lot of my teammates are some excellent, wonderful content creators. And I get to go review their drafts and suggest ideas. And so that's defensive work as well. It's just like, hey, I'm putting together a CFP. David, so my teammate, is working on a CFP for a conference. And he's like, can you help me come up with a title? I'm like, yeah, that's defensive work, right? Because it's not my thing. But sure, like I've already given my best in offense today. So I'm going to come play defense with you. So that's, for me, that's what a day-to-day looks like. And it serves me and my team extremely well.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for sharing that. I think that as like developers, I think, you know, as we all know, there's tons of neurodiversities and different thinking minds. And honestly, all of us think differently anyways. And I think that when it comes to our type of work, it is sometimes hard to balance sort of productivity and like being in the zone and then taking those kinds of breaks. And I know I personally struggle with sort of the prioritization and like staying in the right place when it needs to, just because there's so many different things you could potentially be working on, especially in like a DevRel type of a role, right? I mean, you can be putting on 10 hats.
And I think that's the worst, right? This is the great enemy of any professional, but I think the DevRel professional particularly is when people, things, circumstances, and sometimes yourself, your own lack of boundaries and control will interrupt that precious offensive time. In my case, those 90 minutes. Like if I let anything mess me up in those 90 minutes, I've effectively wasted a day. It's bad. I do not let anything, like sometimes my wife will open the door and I'm like, no, go away. And she knows me well enough to know that, oh, he's in his sandbox, you know? But it's, I'm very protective of that because it's prime time. You wouldn't give prime time to like TikTok, you know, if you did, there's a problem. I think that's for me, like something I protect a lot.
I'm going to honestly try that. Have you ever heard of the Ivy Lee method?
Ivy Lee? I haven't.
Yeah. So it's a different concept, but still supposed to essentially, like, way back in like the late 1800s, this person went into essentially like the industry work at that time, right? A lot of industrial, and they were trying to figure out how to be more efficient. And the person who did this, I want to say his name is Charles Schwab, but I don't remember if it's the actual, like the business banking Charles Schwab, if they're related or not, but definitely Google it if you want all the actual historical details. I'm just sharing my version, but you essentially make a list every day and it's six items that you get done on that list and it's prioritized. And so it's like, you're supposed to work through that list in order. And for me, my brain likes to procrastinate the difficult task, which are probably some of those defensive types of tasks. And so I need it because it sort of keeps me in check. But I wonder if there's like sort of a beautiful version of both of these, right? Where it's like, you've got two tasks that are like your offensive deep work. And then you've got sort of these four defensive tasks, and that's how you operate your day. It feels like a very beautiful hybrid anyways.
Yeah, that's exactly how I do it. That's exactly how I do it.
Cool.
But I'm careful around, so I do have lists, and I allow myself no more than two offensive bouts a day, I think, because that's also then just half the work day. It's like 3 or 4 hours, right?
Yep.
And I get like, I risk burnout if I allow myself a third. I just know that. But I'm careful around the use of the word priorities, because this is a lesson I learned from Gabe Greenberg, my previous CEO at G2I, and also one of the best CEOs in the, I have the privilege of knowing quite a few CEOs. This guy is by far one of the best, absolutely incredible human being. He mentions, and he constantly used to remind me on the job, and he still does, we still talk, where he's like, hey, look, man, the word priorities is a very new word in the English language. It came like hundreds of years after priority. We were always, like in history, there was always one priority. You have one priority. Like, this is the thing, this is your offensive work task. This is the thing you focus on. Priorities came about at the time of, like, you know, the Industrial Revolution, and like when everything got automated, and oh, we can do more now, so let's just do more. But the problem with that is we're really not good at context switching. And so if you have like six priorities, you're giving a sixth of your attention to everything, which to me doesn't work. I would rather give 100% of my attention to one thing and do it extremely well, with polish, with you know, pulling out the stops, with making sure it's going to scale. Like, I want to do it properly, as opposed to spend 1/6 of my attention doing it properly, you know? And so that's why the list for me of these six things would probably be like one offensive to five defensive, or maybe two offensive to four. That can work. But I already know that on that day, I'm going to be very tired after work.
Interesting. Okay. Very good to know. I'm going to try that, because honestly, I think that I can be very easily distracted as well. You know, if there's something, especially if you're doing defensive work, it's easy to look away and be like, oh, there's something else hanging out. Hello, Rizal, Jason, Alden, and LinkedIn user that is not sharing their name. I'm glad that you're enjoying the productivity tips. Okay, that's really cool. So what are some examples when you get into that offensive? I mean, obviously it could be maybe creating a tutorial. It could be actually coding something. Is that what those look like? Are there other examples of like what your offensive work can look like?
That's a good question. Yeah. As part of my defensive work, sometimes I'm just on X or Twitter, depending on how much you believe Elon Musk is a Nazi. But I call it X. Like, sometimes I just scroll this platform and I see things and get inspired. I think that's also part of work, right? Is like, you just get inspired from somewhere. And I saw bolt.new. They have, and StackBlitz as a company have a bunch of like .new domains. React.new belongs to CodeSandbox, but there's a lot of .new stuff. And I thought, well, at DataStax, we make LangFlow, the sandbox for AI. And I want an and I said we should maybe own langflow.new, you know? So I floated this idea, and people thought it was cool. And then my manager, or we call them coaches at DataStax, Carter, was like, you know what we should do? We should have LangFlow, but like unauthenticated. Because LangFlow right now, like, if anyone wants to go try LangFlow, like, we'll make you log in first. And so you've got to sign in with Google, which, like, why should I sign into this thing? I don't even know what it is, you know? And so Carter, my coach, was like, what if we just made like langflow.new be this unauthenticated, zero friction, just go there, start playing in the sandbox instantly. And I was like, that's awesome, Carter. And so this idea came. And so at this point, I already knew this is going to be an offensive task, you know? So that's how it comes. Like I just get, and so that's when I spoke to Carter. I was like, do you think we should do this? Carter was like, yes, management loves it. Let's go. And so I was like, that's it. I scheduled an offensive task. And so all of last week, literally last week, my offensive time every day was on langflow.new. And I shipped it on, I think it was Friday last week. And I just published a little video about it today. But like, it's the product of an entire week of offensive work. And it's not an easy problem to solve because it's a serverful application. So you've got to run it on, it will not run on like Vercel or Netlify. You can't just like spin it up there because they do serverless functions. They don't host servers. And Langflow is a server. So you've got to think, okay, Docker, I've got to do a lot of DevOps. I've got to make sure it scales. I need enough memory. Do I use render? Do I use flight control? Or do I just get like a physical metal machine and expose that to the internet? And there's a lot that can go wrong there, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was fun. The offensive work was fun because you get to spend like deep focus on the DevOps side of this, making sure that if like 200 people create an AI workflow and run it all at the same time, is it going to crash, you know? And how do we mitigate that? And then you need to think about monitoring, like how do we keep an eye on how much CPU and memory is being used? Then you think of alerting, like how do we ping people when something's down? And all of this rolls into just a great, great week of solid offensive work. And what's the end result? We get langflow.new. It's published. It's great. People use it. I have metrics. I can see that we are about to cross 100 users today. You know, so like, yeah, it's just great. And so to answer your question, that's how like we arrive at like scheduling offensive work. We get an idea and we decide, hey, is this worth offensive work? And then if it is, it goes in that pile.
That's amazing. I forgot that you work with Carter. So say hello to Carter. It's been a hot minute since the last time I chatted with him. And it was exciting to see him come back into the DevRel world because he is like such an amazing, experienced, like awesome leader. And so to bring him back into the workforce, I was like, yes. So it's exciting to see.
Yeah, we should maybe get him on the show.
Oh, that's actually a good idea. There's, I started the show, December 16th is the day I started the show. And it was a very passive, I'm like, okay, let's just like warm into it, like kind of ease into it type of thing. And now it's like, oh, whoa, it's going, people love it. Like the views are astronomical, honestly, like way more than I ever expected. And I'm not really marketing it. So now I'm like, oh, okay, I need to actually get more aggressive with like really going into my Rolodex and starting to fill all the potential days. So I absolutely will bring him on the show. Okay, so that's awesome. You like literally built something that is very complicated, obviously not small, having to do many, many, many different skills. Did you just work on it last week or had you started it the week before?
It's a complicated question. So it started with defensive work. What is that? It didn't. I take that back.
Okay, valid.
It started with a design document.
Okay.
So it depends like what you mean by started, right? Because like you could say it started from that conversation with Carter, and Carter was like, write a doc. So I wrote a doc, and then we like left comments in the doc, and there were lots of ideas. So if we include that as the starting time, I believe that was December 16th around that. So the same time you started the streams.
That's beautiful.
But the actual like engineering work to stand this up and host it and expose it to the internet and make it scale and monitoring, all of that, that took the week. Yeah, that was just last week, Monday to Friday. But it's because we did all of this pre-work before, right? We were thinking about like, what does it look like? What does a decent flow look like? How do we host it, et cetera? So yes, in fact, that's really maybe a useful takeaway for people is if you spend enough time like planning beforehand, the execution time becomes much smaller than if you just like make it up as you go.
Yeah. You know, and honestly, like, okay, so first I'm wildly impressed, but I'm constantly impressed by your skills. Like you are just so intelligent and you're so capable, but also like so kind and humble. Like one of my favorite humans, honestly, if the world doesn't already know that, you're one of my favorite humans. But I think coming back to that, like, wow, that's a lot, right? But then at the same time, like what you were able to bring together as a team to do that, if folks are able to start to create those types of documents and think in that way, right, that becomes like V0 and Bolt and, you know, the product you built becomes like so much more capable because now you have started to spec that out. And that's something you can put in, you know, some type of an AI prompt to be like, this is what I want to build. Even if you're not going to fully build it out in Bolt, like maybe you get some general idea or whatever else, right? Because you've put in those work in details. Is there any tips or sort of hacks or things you want to share in how you presented or brought together that document?
Honestly, no. I just because like I think whatever I share is not novel. Maybe we can learn from psychology. I forget the name, but there's a trauma specialist who wrote a book on like dealing with psychological pain and trauma. And it hurts me that I can't remember. But the idea that he had was, and they tested this on people. You just take 15 minutes. Every so often, it doesn't even have to be a day. It could be like 3 times a week, 4 times a week, or even once a week. Take 15 minutes and just like write down. Doesn't matter if it's neat, like no one's going to read it. You just like write down your most painful experience in 15 minutes. So you give yourself a 15-minute window. You just write it down. Nobody cares how it looks. Nobody's going to read it. And that's it. Just write it down and you're done. And if you do that repeatedly week after week, you just like whatever pain is attached to that experience just goes away. Like it doesn't even affect you anymore. And this is proven. Ooh. This was a big experiment done with many, many people. And it just works. Like this is the way to get over difficult experiences, maybe even from childhood, right? Like people who were bullied, like they just write down in detail. They describe their bullying sessions over 15 minutes. And over time, this loses its power. So now bringing that back to like this langflow.new thing, my approach was I'm just going to write. I don't care. I'm just going to write like word vomit here. And, you know, word vomit gives you the basis to then clean it up and make it nice. You know, but like if you don't have, at least for me, if you don't have the word vomit, maybe I should find the word soup. I don't know. Like if you don't have that in the beginning, then you have nothing. And I think for the early stages of a creative process, like writing a document, it's always better to have something, even if it's trash, than nothing, because that something can be refined, but nothing can't be refined. Nothing is nothing, you know?
Yep.
So my process is we go from nothing to crude, and then we refine, and then we polish, and then we ship.
I love that. Yeah, I think it is helpful. Like I know what you're saying in terms of like it's sort of the normal process, but it's nice to hear other people's process and like how they go through and think about that. And that psychology note is amazing. Like there's Aaron Francis was on the show, I think not last week, but the week before, another great episode. And he had actually mentioned something about just he just writes everything down. So when it's like, okay, I've got a lot to get done, I've got a lot on my heart, I've got a lot going on, he just sort of dumps that, right? It's a similar concept. And then he's like, once I get that out, then it's like it doesn't seem as scary, like oh, okay, I do have to go take care of visa paperwork, right? And it's like, yes, I'm avoiding it. It does suck to do it. But if I get it on paper, then it's like, okay, it's not actually that scary to go take the steps to go do it. So that's kind of a culmination there of combinations. Wow, so many productivity hacks I'm going to implement, which I'm in this space of like, I'm in an opportunistic place of being able to implement these. So it's perfectly timed.
Yeah, I think I'm curious, like, I feel like productivity tips like this that I use myself. I'm curious to see, because I'm living Tessa on like the forefront of this AI wave, whatever this is, you know. And there's so much talk about agents, and there's so much talk about the end of work. Like, oh, we're not gonna have to work anymore because agents are gonna be doing everything. And part of me thinks like, do these productivity tips even matter? Like, will they matter? Like, what if the machines just do all our work? Will we still have to think about like offensive work, defensive work, or are we just going to like paint all day and take LSD or something? You know, like there's this dystopian, maybe not dystopian. There's this vision of two futures. It could go either way. And some people say, well, there's the way, or actually no, what I wanted to say was this one, this one future that someone envisioned where the machines did all the work for people and people just didn't do anything, or they just like, you know, pursued their dreams, whatever that means. You play Fortnite all day, I don't know. But at some point, the people learned how to do the things that machines did. They stopped knowing how to do them. Generations came and went, and at some point, like for example, me, I'm not handy. I don't know how to hang up a light bulb. I don't know. This is maybe me revealing my own ignorance. I don't know how to like drill a hole in a wall and find studs and put picture. I've never been handy, which is fine because I have a partner. But the point I'm trying to make is over generations, if the machines keep doing the work for us, we may just forget to do stuff, like how to do stuff. You know, we may just forget how to even talk to each other because everybody's talking to an agent. And then what does that look like? You know, so all that to say, like the productivity tips, I appreciate that we appreciate them, but I don't, do they have an expiry date? I don't know if they're going to be useful in a few years.
That brings up a really, really, really valid point.
Yeah, maybe the real productivity tip is learn how to make your own AI agents. And this is something
for real.
This is something I'm really like. So I have to book some flights for travel, for vacation. And I'm doing this instead of booking my flights, instead of going on like Google Flights or whatever. I'm literally just writing an agent that I can be like, I need flights. I need them at this price point. Arrive now, depart then, get them for me. And I'm not using OpenAI's new operator. I'm like building this from scratch just because I think that's the way, like that's the ultimate productivity tip, right? Is to like be ahead of this topic.
I agree. You know, what's actually really beautiful about that, like you and I could probably have a good conversation about this later, is like, I want to create an agent that has sort of a general rubric or scoring model for developer experience, like going into a site and it's like, okay, can I easily see what's capable? Can I find the docs that I need? Does it all connect together? Yeah. See, I've got like a scoring model that I've started creating already, that I think would be just a really beautiful tool because I'm doing it every day and I'm like, okay, you're missing this. This shouldn't be there. And it's like, it's something that I spend a great deal of time on. And I'm like, can I get a score back from an agent that's at least a predecessor, right? That's like a 1 to 10 or 1 to 100 or whatever. And then I can tap in and be like, okay, human brain, what should be done to improve this? Or who knows, maybe it can even come back and say, you should fix this. You got excited, so obviously you're into it, but
you can do this so easily. It's like right at your fingertips. It's very doable. More so with LangFlow because it's all visual, but like you can definitely do this. And I'm happy to like walk you through that if you want at some point. It's not, you just need a browser and you need an agent that can use it. This is not hard. Like we have both those things.
Right. Yeah, I know. Because when Claude came out with like their sort of like navigation, right? And I know like build your own, right? Totally into that. When they came out with it, I was like, oh my gosh, like how, of course this is something that we can do, right? Starting to navigate, fill out forms, do some of these other things. So I would actually love probably the LangFlow sort of infrastructure just in my current state of like technical chops. But then at the same time, like I'm in a place where I'd like to build it and then like learn to maintain it, right? So it's like, that's how I learn, coming back to sort of college and education, throw me to the wolves, throw me in a situation, force me to learn it by like fire. And then I've got it, you know? So speaking to what you were sharing, right, about productivity hacks, I think we already see that play out, right? And, you know, depending on sort of like where, what game you were playing and what code you were diving into. But like, even if we look at the modern JavaScript stacks, right? Like those developers in most cases don't understand the underlying infrastructure. That was like not an option when I was a developer, right? I had to understand every element of PHP and every element of my servers and every element of my DevOps because there wasn't all these beautiful tools and frameworks and things already created. So it's like, we're already seeing it happen. It's just in like different forms, you know?
Yeah, and it gets even scarier when agents, like kind of like I talked about this dystopian future, when agents do all of this for us, we don't even know. Like I think because frameworks exist, a lot of people just don't know the fundamentals of the web anymore. Like,
exactly.
Like I was in a discussion yesterday on X with a person who was complaining that AI operators can't read their website. And I thought, why? And turns out their entire website was rendered exclusively with JavaScript. So no JavaScript, no reading. And of course, like AI browsers don't have JavaScript. They expect static markup, right? And so I think we just don't know how to build websites anymore already because of the frameworks that some will output just JavaScript. I think with AI assistance, this will only get worse, which gives us more of an imperative to like preserve teaching the right things, because unfortunately LLMs aren't there today where they teach the right things most of the time. I think about the agent, I just want to respond to Rizal's comment here. Rizal, we can also build that agent for you, or you can build that agent for your expense reports also with like there's integrations with literally everything. I think it's so just to circle back, Tessa, to your awesome idea, we're doing a collaboration with a company called Tiny Fish. They have a project, a product called Agent QL.
They're a client of mine. That's how the playground became. Because like you said with Sandbox, like they were original client. And I was like, you need a Sandbox. Because there was like, I didn't have the aha moment of what I could do. And so I'm so excited to hear that. I love them. Love them.
And so they are instrumental to your agent, right? Because they allow you to query the browser with AI. Mm-hmm. You can see like, find me the link to the docs, mm-hmm. and it will get you that element.
It does.
And then if that doesn't exist, then your agent's like, aha, this is bad. So Langflow plus Agent QL is basically your agent. It already exists in my mind and probably in yours. So that's so cool. That's so cool.
I got fat hookups at both of those companies. What a beautiful, beautiful synergy. It's funny because we did, if you look in the Built for Devs Hub, so anyone, if you're listening to the podcast version, it's hub.builtfor.dev. Otherwise, if you're in the stream, you can see the annoying little ticker thing at the bottom. There's actually a recording in there with Rachel, who does DevRel over there. And so her and I were sort of digging through because I was like, okay, I wanted it for developer engagement. So something that you and I have had many conversations about. Can I go out and understand if someone's having a conversation or if someone is sharing something? Can I scrape sort of insights to better understand a developer? And so that's actually what we were diving into. And so that sort of exploded all kinds of different ideas of how to scrape. And then I started building a recipe app. Like, I'm so annoyed by meal planning. But I have all these recipes that I curate and create on my own. So I don't want to use these apps that are like, here's all these things. Like, I have opinions, you know? And so then I was using Agent QL to scrape recipes. So it would go out, scrape the recipes of the websites and that the web. I have recipes all over the place, right? And so it would go scrape the recipe, bring it into my app. So anyways, long story short, Agent QL is so cool. So
yeah.
Definitely go check out the culmination of the two tools because it's limitless, really.
If the culmination doesn't exist in your tool yet, we should make that. I think that would be a fine and then you know what we can do, Tessa? We can then use your tool on Langflow because it's open source and we can get a DevEx score just for Langflow itself. That's a pilot project, you know?
Oh my gosh,
And then we can go do LangChain because that's also open source. We could do React. There's Aiden. I don't know if you know Aiden. Aiden Bai. He's a developer. Also someone great for your show. Aiden makes Million.js, which is a rendering library that's faster than React. And Aiden has been obsessed with performance, I think, more than the average person. Like he does this thing where he goes on literally all the websites of like the Fortune 500 and more. And he has a Chrome extension that he built that shows you like when your applications render unnecessarily and a lot. And so he does this thing where he goes publicly on social media and is like shaming these companies. He's like, look, Nike, your thing renders a million times when I type a keystroke. What's with that? And some of them actually fix it, right? But the reason I bring this up is Aiden is somebody who's really, really obsessed with performance. And he... all of his work, including Million.js, is fully open source. And so, I think that's sort of at the heart of what we want, right? We want a better web and we want it to be open source. And like your tool, the DevEx score thing, could be kind of like what Aiden does for performance, but for open source projects and their developer experience, you know? You could literally just go on like Towry, you know? Towry is like Electron, but with Rust. You could like use your, you could point your tool at the Towry project and be like, look, they're missing a change log here and help them improve.
Exactly. That's exactly. And for me, it's like, I want to decrease the time that I'm investing in doing developer experience audits, you know, so it's like a selfish time saver. But I think it is something that's like really beautiful to put out into the ecosystem too, because often like when I am talking to clients, it's like, it's one thing, you know, and I think some people can get a little like, oh, there's some secret sauce here. But for me, I'm like, I don't really feel that way. I'm like, hey, you should understand how I look at developer experience, because at the end of the day, you still have to hire someone to go do the work, right? And so I think it's a really beautiful thing when we can share like how clear it is. Like just on LinkedIn, I shared convex.dev. Like I've actually have never touched the tool, but I just happened to land on it, for whatever reason, it pulled me in. And they just have like a beautiful navigation. And so I think like that level of sort of sharing and understanding like what developers need and what that experience could look like, I think is just such a fruitful end result. So, okay. So when are we going to build this? Rizal, you want to come on and help us build it? I need to do more of that.
I don't know if you want to build it in public, but if you did want to build it in public, I would easily build this with you. I think it's a great, great use case.
Yeah, I would absolutely love to build in a public. Like I said, I don't have any secrets. Like, I think whatever I feel is the sort of benchmark, I think the more we could crowdsource it so folks could be like, but I care about this in developer experience, the better, because then I think then that can make for a much greater and more fruitful benchmark at the end of the day.
This sounds awesome. It sounds like built for DevX data stacks. Let's get the Slack channel going. That's so cool.
Let's do it. Yes, let's absolutely do it. Okay, this is happening. So anyone listening, you'll see this in the community in the future. So go sign up, hub.builtfor.dev. We'll make sure that we get that out there. Okay, so we've talked about so many things and I'm like nearing the end of our time, but I could, similar to others, continue to talk to you for hours because you are fabulous. Yes, Rizal, I will definitely bring Aiden on. Honestly, I have a client who is like hyper focused on performance. So I want to get Aiden's opinion on that tool specifically, actually. So I have many reasons to reach out to Aiden now. So watch out, Aiden, I'm coming for you. One of the questions I like to ask everyone is how they get unstuck. And I feel like you will have some very straightforward, but potentially liberating ways that you potentially think about getting unstuck. So I would love to hear if you're ever stuck with the work, people stuff, or if you're ever, you know, stuck in the technology side of things and sort of what are your steps to get through that and get unstuck?
Good question. I am not neurotypical. I actually think nobody's neurotypical. I think neurotypical is a lie by the evil media. I think neurotypicality is just not a thing. And so my flavor of neurodivergence, it leans close to ADHD. I don't think I have ADHD per se textbook, but I do work that way in that like I'll hyper-focus on things. I'll also be distractible. But usually when there's like pressure, I do good. Like I'll finish. Yep, so what unsticks me is like somebody literally like pointing a knife at me and is like, I'm a end you. And like, this doesn't happen, but... It has to feel like it, you know? I think a good example of, and I want to shout out my colleagues who like, they keep coming to me with this visa stuff, which I praise the Lord for them, because if they didn't, I would just never have a visa. My US visa expires this year. And with the new administration, I don't even know if I'm going to come back, but like it's, they keep emailing me about it. And in the moment, it is irritating to me. I will say that, but it's good that they do that, because then I actually finish the process. So what unsticks me is pressure. And sometimes that pressure is external and I thank God for it. But there's also times where I'm able to manufacture my own pressure. Like I'll self-impose deadlines. And this helps me unstick. Like, for example, I highly value integrity. And by integrity, I mean meaning what I say and saying what I mean. And so I myself will tell my coach, I'll be like, so it's Monday, on Friday, I'm going to ship langflow.new. And damn, what did I just do to myself? You know? And so that's just me like unsticking myself, is like setting these somewhat unrealistic deadlines. Thankfully, like if I fail, there's grace, you know? But that helps unstick me a lot, is just, and also to be fair, setting the, in my case, the 90-minute focus window is also a version of that, where I literally tell myself, look, I have 90 minutes to make progress on this offensive task. If I don't, I've failed. And it feels like a fundamental failure to me. It feels like sin. It's not a light, oh, it's okay, I'll try again tomorrow. It's like, no, I've failed. Like, it's bad. Like, I feel the weight of it when I don't successfully complete my 90-minute work bout. Right. And so for me, that 90 minutes is also a forcing, it's a deadline to unstick myself. And so once I start, I'm effectively already unstuck, because the sense of urgency to finish this thing within the time frame is real. I tend to be more like stuck in a negative way when I don't even start. This is like, you know what I mean? Like, you can get stuck.
Yes.
That's for me difficult. Like, for example, the visa thing is something like that, where I let myself get stuck because I don't even want to approach it, because it's so, one, annoying. Difficult, but two, just painful. Just thinking like they think I'm going to come here and be an illegal immigrant. I don't like it, you know? And maybe they don't, right? But there's just enough past experience where that's been, there's evidence of that, put it that way. And so I just don't like approaching the subject for it. And so I don't really have like a something that works 100% of the time to unstick myself in those cases. I'd love to know. Do you have anything to unstick yourself in such cases?
No, I'm the same exact way. My brain thinks the same way. So I know, but if we can find one, that would be amazing. I will say that Aaron's suggestion of writing everything down did help because it made it feel like, okay, it's annoying, but it's not that difficult to go chase it down. Sure, I have to go do it, but it's like, okay, I can get it done.
I will say this, one thing that helps me, so I have maybe not 10 out of 10 times, but like 4 out of 10 times succeeded in unsticking myself from these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And what helps me in those cases is to just force it. Yeah. Is to, like, you know, I'm a man and I've seen my fellow men do like the dumbest things just because it's like cool, especially when you're younger. Like, I've seen guys mm-hmm. do like, there's a red hot like branding iron and they're like, just brand me, dude, just brand me, look right here, just do it, man. And it's like, and I'm like, why do you want that? But I don't know, it's like a bravado thing or something, but they're like, just do it, just get it over with, I'm so ready. And they force it, you know, they're literally like, it's gonna hurt, but yeah, I'm gonna feel like a man, you know, this kind of thing. That helps me unstick myself from things that I'm afraid of, is to brace. Yeah. Bracing, that's the thing, is to be like, this is going to suck, but I'm gonna do this so hard and then it's gonna be over. Like that unsticks me a lot. And I think the more you practice that skill, or at least for me, the more I practice that skill, the better it comes to. So how then do I practice this skill? It's the, this will make me, people will not like me after I say this, I think, but it's the cold plunge. It's the ice bath. This thing is crazy, Tessa. Like I'm scared to go in, but after I do, it makes me brave. And it makes me be like, you know what? That was extremely painful, but look, I'm out and I'm warm. So like, let's go do this visa thing, you know?
Yes.
Cold exposure is a real unsticker for like the scary stuff that I procrastinate on.
Yeah, that actually, not to like, you know, be weird about anything here, but like that's childbirth, I feel like. And I think like you go into it and it's like, you know, I've had 4 kids, right? First time I was like, oh, well, just, you know, it is what it is. And I realized how incredibly painful it is, like excruciatingly, like nothing I've ever imagined in my entire life. 3 more kids, I'm like, okay, I have to have that approach, right? It's like, I'm going to do this because I knew what that feeling was like at the end, like when I got to hold my baby. And so it's very much like that. So I will harness my inner like brave warrior woman to sort of, you know, manifest that energy, I think, to get it done. Because I do agree. I'm really curious. There is it's called motivation code. And it's essentially, it's very similar to some of these personality tests, but I personally really think it's like the only one that matters. Because what it does is it helps you find your motivation. And so I'm an achiever and I have the same exact mentality. I have this like win or lose mentality. And it's not that I have to like win every game or win every video game or win at playing cards or win in that way, but it's whatever objectives I set for myself to go do. Like if I don't get those done, similar to your 90 minutes, hey, this is what I have to get done, I feel the same way. It's like this immense sin, this failure that like can actually like really take me down if I let it, but it also can like fuel me to be incredibly successful. And it sounds very relatable to that. So I'm really curious if you're also an achiever, because there's a lot of different sort of pieces that go into that and how you think about things. And it's just a beautiful sort of dimension and personality breakdown. Because when you bring the right people together, those people win. And then you've got people that do sort of the other pieces. And it just makes this beautiful, beautiful round team. All right. Well, this has been an amazing conversation. How can people find you? It sounds like they should go check out Linkflow. So throw them the URL again, make sure I don't screw that up, but I would love for folks to be able to go and find you and what you're working on and find some of this awesome goodness that we've chatted about.
Yeah. I'm on X at Tejas Kumar _. Good luck spelling that. It's an Indian name. But I just go to my website, tej.as, for me. And then for the things I'm working on, yeah, Langflow. Langflow is awesome. Lang, like language, and flow, like rhythm and flow. Langflow.new. Mm-hmm. Is how you can build your first AI agent, literally. Like if you've never built an AI agent before, Langflow.new is a sandbox where you can go there. There's a tutorial, like here's how you build an agent and you actually build an agent. And we also like define what an agent is and all of that. It's this resource that I think is going to be helpful for people in what people are calling the year of agents. So LangFlow, and also, you know, DataStax, I work there. We really just want to democratize AI for everybody and make it accessible. We build tools to do that. We have a vector database called AstroDB and LangFlow, and they're all useful. But fundamentally, at least the most important part of the work to me is to make sure that people aren't left out and that people learn what they want to learn and are able to really have the careers they want and the lives they want. Because frankly, I have that. I have the career I want. I have the life that I want. And it's a really great place to be. I'm one of the happiest people in the entire world, except when I'm losing at Fortnite. But I, you know, and I think it's just so cool that I even get to play Fortnite, you know, with my family. And like, it's so cool. So I just want people to have that as well. So
yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love that so much. Honestly, I need to harness my inner Tejas more. Like, just, I live the best life too. And even though running a business is difficult and there are challenges, like, I wouldn't trade it for anything. And so, I love to hear that. I think if we go out on a note here, like, live your best life, be happy about the challenges that you get to face, even if they kind of suck, like visas and other annoying procrastinatable tasks. Thank you so much for being on the show. It's been a fabulous conversation and I cannot wait until we all get together and build this DX agent because it's the world needs it and it's going to be super cool.
Let's do it.
Yeah. All right. I hope everyone has a fabulous day. Happy Friday, y'all.